This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, today is a very, very fun episode. This is called Why Are Young People Having Less Sex? We've talked about this a fair bit. We've mentioned it a lot on the podcast, but this is big news.
So, not to me, it's not.
No, you talk about this all the time, right? Yeah, you've been talking about this on different publications and in the media and stuff.
Yeah, it's a thing. And what's so funny about it is that it's not so long ago that everyone would be thrilled to bits that young people were having less sex. You know, and all their parents would be whooping for joy, and everybody would be really, really saying, absolutely right, good, they're saving themselves, it's wonderful. And now everyone's saying, oh, well, it's going to be affecting their health, and oh dear, what's going on? I mean, you know, make your mind up.
Well, like, hang on a minute. Why now then do people think that's a problem?
I think that there's this sort of big discourse around sex being good for you and healthy. And there's a lot of fears about people becoming more commitment phobic, that sort of thing. Yeah. So I think that there's a sort of belief that people are not going to want to live in couples anymore, or it's going to break down the family unit and things like that. We're now sort of catastrophizing about the direction society is going in. And I'm just kind of saying, whoopee, you know, relationships should be what you want them to be, and stop being so boring, really.
Okay, well, you heard it here first. Yeah. I mean, what about this though? Because obviously we did that amazing episode with Dr. Alice Patcher.
Yes, we did.
From Japan.
From Japan,
And Japan, a lot of people always talk about, you know, I won't bore you with the details, but they've been ahead technologically from the rest of the world, or particularly the Western world, for years. You know, they've been 10 or sometimes 20 years ahead, people say. And with that, because they don't spend as much money on defense. Anyway, I'm nerdy about that. I love all that stuff. Anyway, that's by the by.
Me too, yeah.
But long story short, they've got a real issue with the birth rate now in their country. And a third of their population now is like over 60.
Yeah.
And now they've got this problem of like, okay, well, we're not having as many kids.
Yeah.
Who's going to pay for the pensioners? Mm. And adult nappies outsell baby nappies.
That is true. I mean, in South Korea, the problem is even worse.
So,
and as you know, I was in China fairly recently and came back with whooping cough.
And lots of information about pandas and the porn made for them.
Absolutely.
Check out our episode on that.
All the women I was talking to in China were saying, oh, we don't want to have children. It's too much trouble. It's too difficult. Mm. And it affects your lifestyle. And they're just discovering what it's like to go out and work and to have more efficacy, if you like. I mean, to feel more of their own person and, you know, have their own money and all of that sort of thing. You know, China had this one child policy.
Yeah.
So not having brothers and sisters, they don't see the fun of having all those kids around and the pleasure of a family life. I mean, it isn't family life. It's you're a kid in with a couple of adults and you're in competition with your friends. So where is the pleasure? They're not interested. So China, falling birth rate as well. So it's that part of the world.
And I think that's spreading over here too.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, though, what would be really interesting, and I haven't found this, and I don't know if it's been done, but I'd be interested to see what the rate of sex is amongst different sexualities as well, because that would be interesting, whether the age range is also, it's like it's falling amongst the gay community or the lesbian community, etc. Because that would be interesting, because obviously the birth rate stuff, that, you know, you would assume for the most part that's straight couples. But let's get into this then. We might as well talk about this study. So it indicates that men and women between the ages of 18 and 24 are having sex less often. A study published in the JAMA Network in the US said that between 2000 and 2002 and 2016 and 2018, past year sexual inactivity rose from almost 19% to almost 31% amongst men ages 18 to 24. So that's an increase of 10%. And when they say past year sexual inactivity, that means that they've asked the question, have you had sexual activity in the last year? And that means that 31% of men aged 18 to 24 said no. That's basically one in three.
Yeah, and I don't know why that's so surprising. And I think some of it might be to do with what you call sex as well. So if they mean intercourse, then maybe there've been more people who've been kissing or masturbating or having some sort of sex that we'd call sex, but that, you know, isn't being counted as sex. So I think they're probably thinking intercourse. So that's pretty specific, but we don't know, do we?
I suppose, but I wonder whether, you know, I think it might be anything above kissing. I would imagine. I don't know, because it just says sexual inactivity, which makes me think,
I know, it's difficult, isn't it? Because we don't know, but it, but generally speaking, in these studies, what they mean is intercourse. So,
right.
So that's one thing.
But either way, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. And it definitely goes with what's going on over here.
So, and sexual activity among women of the same age remained relatively constant, rising from 15 to 19% over the same time period. The study also found that sexual activity declined significantly amongst men and women ages 25 to 34, 7% versus 14% amongst men, 7% versus 12% amongst women. So it's almost basically doubled in that time for the 25 to 34 year olds in activity. Yeah. Interestingly, sexual activity did not decline among adults 35 to 44 years old. So then, why?
Right. So the 35 to 44 year old ones, it's probably declined already. I mean, they're probably more likely to be in a relationship. And the younger ones are definitely delaying relationships, getting started. There's a lot more interest. And again, you know, why are we not pleased about this? That people are paying more attention to their mental health and more attention to their plan for the future. Now, this is a generation that was thrown off by COVID. And during the pandemic and subsequently, I was professionally seeing a lot of young people who were very, very put out that their opportunities had been closed down. And what a lot of people were very afraid of was turning up at university or leaving home or going out into the work environment and still being a virgin, for instance. That was such a big thing.
Yeah. But doesn't that argue the opposite? Wouldn't you think that they would be like, right, well, I've got to have some sort of sex
Because, you know. It's put because they don't feel experienced enough to get started. That's one thing. So some people don't feel experienced enough to get started. Other people just wanted to get that out of the way.
Yeah.
And then
once it's out of the way, then
they could stop and say, well, I we can be friends because, you know, hey, I've been sexually active. I can do it again when I want to. I can stop when I want to. You know, it's just that feeling of, you know, I'm in control of this rather than it's controlling me. I mean, it's a nonsense. Because, you know, having intercourse makes absolutely no difference. Most of them were doing it when they were drunk, can't remember it, not much experience that's of any use there. But
still, it's that mental shift.
It's that mental shift, yeah.
Where you just go, I've done this now, I've lost my virginity, and now, for you know, something in your brain just goes, oh, okay, that's fine. You know, now I feel comfortable again.
Yeah, that's what people were doing. And they felt, you know, they haven't had the chance to meet people, you know, meet girls or meet boys or meet any of the kinds of people that they were interested in. So if, say, they were trans and they had a trans clan at school, all of a sudden they were removed from their trans clan and shut down at home with their mum and dad and brother or sister or whatever it was. And that they weren't able to get that sort of validation to feel that they were developing at the same rate with their friends. They were just left alone with whatever feelings they were having. So there are lots of reasons because of the pandemic why people should not want to do that. But I think the sort of general trauma that people have been through over the past few years, not just the pandemic, but just, you know, the news is awful, there's less money, people aren't able to do the things that they want to do. Everyone's saying this generation won't have as much money as the previous generations. They won't be able to do the things their parents did. You're smirking.
Well, I don't know. Well, sorry, I'm smirking because I'm just thinking about the fact that partly what got me down this rabbit hole is my friend sent me an Economist article in which they showed data showing that sexual content in top films has sharply declined since 2000. Sexual content in these films has honestly gone off a cliff. And I'm sort of wondering, where's the chicken or the egg here?
Well, like, that's which me one too, isn't first? It? As well.
Since 2000?
Well,
Me Too didn't happen in 2000. That was 2016, maybe 2015.
Was it?
When was Me Too? Let's look this up. October 2017. Let's go.
Okay. We've had intimacy coordinators in the last 10 years.
Yes.
And who have been making a difference to...
Explain what an intimacy coordinator
is. An intimacy coordinator helps couples who are doing intimate things on sets, on stage, wherever. And they choreograph what happens. And they make it much more consensual. Because I think some people were in situations that weren't consensual before.
Yeah, sex scenes in films used to just be like, all right, today's the sex scene, you guys just go at it.
Yeah, get on with it.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah.
Now it's choreographed. It can change the story a bit, you know,
the way they do it. I mean, we had Ita O'Brien on the podcast. She's like the big dog intimacy coordinator. And she talked about the fact that like, they want to make sure that these scenes are telling a story. They're not just sexy for sexy's sake. There's got to be some sort of story being told in the movement.
Absolutely.
And they treat it like a stunt. Like a stunt coordinator, or a dance.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's empowered some people. There are some people that are very into it. Now, some of the old actors don't like it. They just want to get on with it.
Look it up. There's some of them you'll be surprised.
Very funny. Yeah. But on the whole, people think it's great and it has made a difference.
And I agree. I just think though, but this is the thing. This has happened since 2000, right? And this was before, because intimacy coordinators have been a more recent thing. I mean, again, it's like around 2020, you know, Normal People was one of the big examples of that. The people that worked on that and Bridgerton as well. These are quite recent TV shows.
Yeah, but intimacy coordinators have been coming along before that. Before 2020.
And they haven't exploded. Now it's like in everywhere. And so that's what I'm saying. I'm wondering, have we as a world, you know, I think people think these days, wow, we're so sexually liberated. There's all these sexualities. There's all these relationship styles. Like these days, people are probably swinging from the chandeliers more than ever. And in fact, in our media and in actual sexual activity, it's getting less. Are we prudes? Are we massive prudes?
No. I think some of the people that are working who are not so keen to just watch, you know, salacious bits in films. So they were more popular because there wasn't anywhere else to go and see sex, I think, or erotica or whatever it was.
And now
it's easy to get porn or OnlyFans. So what's increased instead are the sort of violent scenes, chase scenes, all of that sort of thing, the excitement, the adventure. So that's what they're looking for, not a bit of titillation, because they can get that anywhere, anytime, on their phone.
Yeah, wow. Okay, well, there we are. We told you about the study about young people having less sex. We've given you some context. Let's have a break, and when we get back, we'll talk about why all this is. Welcome back to The Real Sex Education. In part one, we told you that young people are having less sex than they used to, and now we're going to talk about some of the theories circulating as to why this is. And one of the big ones is one that we sort of touched on at the end of part one, Mum, the internet and porn and the increased use of technology and social media in general. So, you know, the rise of digital communication has changed the way that people, and particularly young people, interact with each other. So obviously online dating is one of the things, but like chatting on social media, sliding into DMs, all that sort of stuff. People can have pretty much entire relationships through their phone. Also, that includes sexting and nudes and stuff. So there might be sexual activity going on in that way, but you might meet someone on a dating app, get them on social media, have cyber sex with them, and then never speak to them again. And that might go on for ages.
But that's a theory, but it's not been proved. And actually, people that watch more porn and people that are more into kind of sexual behavior generally tend to have more real life sex as well. So that's what the research shows. Yeah. So on that basis.
So if you want to have sex, start getting watching porn.
Well,
sorry, that was a joke. I just need to really drum that point home. I just hear my executive producer going, no. No. Yeah, that was a joke.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
No. I mean, I think it's just about people's comfort with themselves. I think people are making much more effort to be comfortable with themselves and they're not using other people for validation as much. So people often saw sex as validation. And I know I was brought up with the idea that a man was the solution to all your problems.
If
you're going to grow up, you need a man. And there was also that kind of feeling that if you didn't have a partner, there was something wrong with you. And that starts quite young. So now we're not feeling that way so much. And so it makes a heck of a difference, because we're able to think about ourselves, put ourselves first and worry about how we are, and then bring someone else in if we want to, or have sex if we want to. But it's about us rather than this idea of having a partner.
Well, is that, you know, one of the things that people said here is the changing social norms and attitudes. And we've mentioned Japan, for example. In Japan, women have had a huge new lease of life and independence. And there's more importance placed on the individual now.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like, make sure your own house is okay before you go in. And it's like, you know, and make sure you are in control of your independence. I mean, to be honest, I think there's some, I mean, I think I was reading that book that everyone read, Attached, the attachment theory.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure. And I think that book was making a pretty good case as to why people should couple up. And actually, it's like, you can be more independent when you're not independent, if that makes sense. It actually, it shows that it gives people an air of confidence and stuff.
It can, but only if you're taking it in turns to support one another.
Yes,
so there are an awful lot of people with attachment styles that clash, and actually they become less secure the more the relationship goes on. So they sort of catch, you know, attachment behaviours from the partner. There's a guy called Murray Bowen who is a sort of guru for family therapy. And I mean, unfortunately, has passed away now, but he influenced an awful lot of therapists and an awful lot of therapy, and did a massive amount of research. And I think what was so interesting was that it just kept concluding, the research kept concluding, that people are more likely to be successful in relationships when they can self-validate and when they're not using a partner for validation. So when they're not using sex as a sign that everything's okay, for instance, because you're not getting any pleasure out of that. You're just ticking a box, you know, and I think an awful lot of people are not having much sexual fun. They're just worrying about doing it, getting it done, and then saying, phew.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, is that what we really want? Being able to feel okay about yourself is really important. And then if something goes wrong with your relationship, you're not going to feel, well, I'm a bad person and it's all my fault. You're going to think, oh, well, that's a shame. You know, what have I learned?
Yeah, exactly. Which we're always pushing on this podcast. Relationships are a form of self-development.
They absolutely are.
They are. Yeah, they're self-improvement. So that's great. Economic factors, which we did sort of talk about.
Yeah.
The fact that this is Matt. People, you know what I saw this morning? I saw this morning Piers Morgan on, I think, BBC Question Time, I think, making a really, you know about this whole...
he made a good point.
Yeah, mate.
I mean, I was watching that last night when it was going out, and I was thinking... Wow.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Piers. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. Someone even commented, they said, this is the third time this year that I've agreed with Piers Morgan what is going on.
What's come over him?
Exactly. And funny enough, I was talking about this just a few months ago with my girlfriend and her parents and their family friends. And I said, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. But someone misheard me and thought I'd said because of, you know, exactly. And they thought, they apparently went to someone, they nudged me like, what's a broken cock? What? And I think it's probably because of this podcast and stuff like that. But basically, we will now get to what Piers Morgan said. Piers Morgan was talking about the fact that in this country, what's being proposed is young people doing national service, you know, going into the army for a couple of years or whatever.
One year.
So there is a lot of people going, yeah, that's right. Teaching some bloody respect. You can understand what I think about
a lot of people doing
you
that.
You can think about what I think about this. But, you know, that's because I'm an absolute pacifist. But you know what's so nice is Piers Morgan came on and forever the contrarian said, well, get this. How about our national service to these youngsters?
Yeah, you know,
their lives have been ravaged by COVID. The economic situation at the moment means that they can't even afford to go to the pub and enjoy themselves. They've had years taken out of their lives. If they've got mental health issues or health issues, they have to wait 6, 12, 18 months to be seen by anyone. Think about our national service to these guys, not theirs to us. Not them learning respect from us.
What made me laugh? He said, They can't even go for a swim because they'll be poisoned by sewage.
I know. And you know what? It does cast a really...
It's all true. It's all true. We are like a third world country at the moment. So,
wow.
So, I mean, yes, what the heck? That's exactly what I mean. What the heck have they got to look forward to? What have they got to enjoy? I mean...
And they're not even enjoying sex.
Well, no. So you can understand why the focus is on themselves and personal development rather than... You know, relationships and sex are a bit of a luxury when everything's going well, aren't they? Mm. I mean,
that's how people view it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's no wonder.
I mean, I know we talked about Japan, but there was a really interesting video where they were asking particularly young men about, you know, well, they're asking everyone, but a lot of the young men were like, oh, the reason I don't want to get into a relationship is because they're expensive. You know,
absolutely true, and so many people are saying this, and there's a lot of research done by some of the apps as well, the dating apps and sites, saying that they got very into it during the pandemic, and I know you did this, sending a meal round to the person you were dating. You'd send a meal round for them and a bottle of wine and a rose or something, all of that. And that was the thing. That's much cheaper than going out for a meal, going out and doing things. And dates are often conducted. I mean, I know the dating sites say you shouldn't go to someone's home, but an awful lot of people do get a takeaway and, you know, have a takeaway and watch streaming service and have a bottle of beer or something or a spliff or whatever your thing is. And
wow. That's fucking cool, mum. Don't do that in this country. It is illegal.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't mean people don't do it. Anyway,
I'm
just being realistic.
I know. This is crazy.
Oh, box of chocolates then.
Yeah, well, that's okay. More or less. Yeah. Weed chocolates, space chocolates. Yeah.
So they're having a date at home, and that's a lot cheaper. Also, it turns out that people are really stressed about who should pay and things like that.
Yeah.
And there
are
rules about that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just so difficult. And whoever suggested the first date pays for it is the rule as far as I can see.
Yeah, I think that's kind of fair. Well, I think the who should pay we could talk about for ages.
Yeah, we should do that another time.
Okay, yeah. So like we say, job insecurity, student loan debt, high living costs, and also kind of related to the independence for women particular stuff that we've talked about, but just people now prioritizing their job and pushing relationships further back, which brings us on to delayed adulthood and extended adolescence. Now, this is a point that was interesting to me. Do you think that kids are staying kids longer now? That's sort of what some of these people are suggesting.
Again, it's one of those things where I'm a bit annoyed that they're framing it as delayed adulthood.
Yeah.
Because actually, we've been complaining for years that children are growing up too soon.
Yeah.
And now they're going back to kind of normal growing up. And, you know, taking things a bit more slowly because they've had to, partly because of the pandemic, but also because it's just, you know, they feel supported. I mean, potentially there's more security at home than there used to be. I mean, one of the big differences is people are working from home. Parents are around more. They're not thrown back on their peers, on their friends and things. They're not left to come home on their own, get their own dinner and all of that sort of thing. There's more nurturing and being looked after and having an opportunity to talk to your parents, which may make people feel more secure.
Wow, I wonder what that's like, having more opportunity to talk to your parents.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have known, would you?
No.
I mean, it is true. I was working a lot when you were a teenager.
But what's funny is now that I am like, I'm 28 years old, we speak... Every
You're not
day.
28.
I keep forgetting. I'm not joking. In the last few months, I've Googled how old I am twice because I keep getting this wrong. I've Googled, if you're born on the 14th of June, 1996, how old are you? I've Googled that twice in the last few months and I keep forgetting. I'm 27. Actually, by the time this podcast goes out, I might be 28. Do wish me happy birthday. But it's so true. And because of the economic situation that we were talking about before, people even later than, you know, just being kids and coming back from school and stuff, parents working from home or whatever, but even later in their lives, they're staying in longer because we can't afford to buy houses.
Yeah.
Rent, particularly, you know, for example, where I am in London, rent is a joke and there's almost no, you know, you work to have half of your salary, probably sometimes more, taken by the rent
and boy, that's another reason landlord. For Sorry. Not having for not having kids. I mean, an awful lot of people know that they can't afford to have kids. I mean, you know, if you're going to have to work in order to afford to have kids, then you're going to have to put your child in nursery, and nursery is really expensive.
Oh my god, it's absolutely insane.
Ludicrously
some of the statistics
expensive.
On it, check I mean, them out. They're, just, it's
yeah.
crazy.
So people are just thinking, well, it's just not a possibility. So they're not thinking about getting into relationships in the same way at all.
So that's what they say here. You know, delaying traditional milestones, I think this is interesting, but such as marriage, home ownership, having children. If you, like you just said, having children at the moment, that just seems unthinkable because of how expensive it is. Home ownership, literally impossible. And marriage, well, you know.
Well, 51% of people aren't married.
Yeah. Yeah. So and
51% of people, you know, getting into relationships at the moment are not choosing marriage.
Yeah. And it's interesting because obviously they do make the point here. These are traditional milestones that we are trying to break down anyway. But maybe that's it. You know, maybe this also blends into the whole social norms and attitudes are changing.
I just read this all as positive, all of it. I don't see it as a problem, any of it. I'm setting off balloons. Can you set off some balloons, please, Diggs, with your...
Oh, God, woo-hoo! Yeah. Hang on. Oh, oh, no, that's not balloons.
Oh, ticker tape. That'll do. Ticker tape will do.
Ticker tape will do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well...
Oh, yes. No,
now I've just set off some fireworks. Fuck, am I going to get this right? Hang on. I'm going to try one more time for the balloons. I've put up a peace sign.
Oh,
here
that's
they are.
It. Balloons.
Thank God we got there.
Good day.
Okay. That's another reason, guys. Check us out on YouTube.
Yeah.
Send us a comment to say, wow, I love the balloons, guys. Okay, so what you're saying is, of course, you know, young people facing job insecurity, student loan debt, high living costs. That is good news.
Well, no, those things aren't good news. But people being, I mean, and the way the world is not great. But people being more thoughtful and not rushing into relationships where they are hurt and where they get themselves into financial strife, have unwanted pregnancies, all of those things. I mean, unwanted pregnancy has fallen recently, which is good.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's more people being careful contraceptively, although I hope it is, but I think it's fewer people having sex.
Yeah, exactly.
Which or having penetrative sex.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, you know, that there's more people questioning their identity and finding out more about themselves or feeling more gender fluid or sexually fluid. And there isn't the same kind of need to put down markers to validate your sexuality through your behavior. So for some people, you know, they want to, for instance, you know, so you might be gay and so you want to have gay sex to sort of prove you're gay. You know, that totally makes sense. But you know, in the past, there was always this, oh, right, well, you have to get into a relationship, kiss, wait a bit, have sex, move in, get married, have a baby. Well, people can't do it that way anymore. It's too expensive.
So, and we've sort of touched on it there about, you know, getting your own house in order and the mental health issues at the moment, particularly younger people as well, are going with the trend of this mental health epidemic that we're going in at the moment. So that
it's not,
also has
I mean,
an effect
I,
on...
No, when you say trend, it makes it sound a bit as though people are choosing it.
It's a fad. Yeah.
I mean, it's not. I mean, one, I think there's more stresses on mental health. And two, I think we're more aware of it. And more likely to prioritise mental health now, which is a good thing. It's just a shame that there aren't any services to help people.
Yeah. Fingers crossed that will sort itself out. And then we've sort of talked about this a bit, but a shift in relationship dynamics. So people not committing, people being in situationships and long-distance relationships being more viable.
They are, yeah.
You know, now with online and stuff. So I wonder whether maybe people are switching to that. But so what you're saying is your view on this is a positive thing.
Yeah, not that people can't afford things and that,
that mental health is
going down the plug hole.
Yeah,
but that we're being more questioning and that people are taking more control of their own lives and that they're maybe waiting until they're ready to have sex rather than feeling pushed into it. That can only be a good thing, can't it?
I think so. I have to be honest and say, I think I take the opposite view.
Oh, that's exciting.
I know. Ever the contrarian, I feel like Piers Morgan.
Oh, dear.
I think people's desire for connection and relationships in some form or other hasn't changed, but I think our anxieties have heightened. And that's why we're seeing less sex, because actually, you know, you conduct a lot of your chatting online, which doesn't really improve the face-to-faceness that you can get, and then breed that sort of natural sexual activity through that. Yeah, I sort of fear that that's actually what's going on here.
Well,
and actually people are just really are more anxious about sex than ever.
People are more anxious.
And they're just pushing it out of their minds rather than actually...
But when I was growing up, when you were growing up, were there podcasts like this that you could go to for information?
No.
Were there little short films on YouTube for you?
No.
There is much more information around. So from that point of view, there's more self-help available now.
Yeah.
And I think I have lived through, you know, very kind of pejorative, very blamey kind of attitudes towards young people, generation after generation after generation. And this gives me a sense of how, I mean, how it, the reason that these things have happened, the edginess, the anxiety and that sort of thing are not good. But the relationship with parents improving, the caring about oneself more, the attention to mental health, the wanting to get me right before, you know, expecting someone else to get me right. All of those things, they're all good. And, you know, these are all things that we were looking for and blamed young people for not doing. I mean, you know, the millennials were called snowflakes and blamed for not taking responsibility for themselves. We've got Gen Z just taking responsibility for themselves, being really responsible and really thoughtful. And we're moaning at them and saying, you're not having enough sex. Get a grip.
Yes, I love this.
Yeah,
I love this. Wow, what a wonderful spin on things. If you're a young person and you're listening to this, please do get in touch with us. See what you, I mean, let us know, comment on YouTube.
Are you Team Kate or Team Diggs?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I hope they're Team Kate. But if you guys have your anxieties about it and that sort of stuff and actually just don't feel like the opportunities are there, then please let us know.
Yeah,
but
it's not really that. I mean, it's not that black and white at all.
No, it isn't. It isn't. But how else are we supposed to...
But we can have some fun with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But let us know in the comments what you think. Let us know, you know, like I said, Spotify, YouTube. Also, you can just let us know on our anonymous Google form in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. We are, of course, at the RSC Pod on Instagram, TikTok and X.
Formerly known as Twitter.
Slightly slow, but that's
Wish
fine.
Wish it still was. It's just confusing. Why did X... Gordon
I know.
Bennett.
Yeah, because they're not tweets anymore. They're posts, which I think is a real regression. It's like tweet. Everyone knew what you're talking about. That website, Twitter.
And there's a nice little picture of a little bird.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
whereas now...
Big X. That's his space interests. Elon Musk's space interests are X, aren't they? So
really?
Why is he... Yeah, he could, yeah. So why has he used the name of his space stuff for his social media stuff? It doesn't make sense. It's completely different.
And the website's just gone to fucking shit. The bots on there, particularly the porn bots, it's crazy.
The bots are all... Yeah. Oh, I don't see any of that. Do you know, there are no porn bots on my ex. Not one.
Well,
I'm a bit disappointed.
You should be, because some of the porn on Twitter is cracking.
Is it?
Well, you know what?
No.
One day we'll talk about it. One day we'll talk about it. One day we'll talk about it. It'll come up. Okay. Make sure you're subscribed or following this podcast, wherever you listen to it now, watching it, because we're going to talk about this one day. And you want to be around for that, because it's going to be a fucking wild ride, that episode. All right, everyone. We love you very much. See you very soon. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.